The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Endocrine board review questions are presented by Dr. Jack Snitzer and Dr. John Sutton.
Thank you, Dr. Sutton. We have a few audience response questions. So get out your cell phones, and Dr. Sutton and Dr. Snitzer will come. And can we see the first one? Internet connection lost. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Okay, according to the American Thyroid Association 2015 guidelines in regards to differentiated thyroid cancer, which of the following is supported by good evidence for screening a sibling? Your answers.
So for thyroid cancer, we used to tell patients, you know, if you have a thyroid nodule and it turns out to be cancer, maybe your sister or your parents or your children should be screened. But generally, the current guidelines say don't routinely do ultrasound imaging just to see if a otherwise unaffected a sibling or a first-degree relative. So that's kind of an on-the-fence thing, but the guidelines say you probably won't find a lot of it, and you might dig up things that don't matter.
The American Thyroid Association 2015 guidelines support which of the following for evaluation and treatment in a patient with a thyroid nodule on physical exam. First answer is TSH, and if suppressed, then thyroid ultrasound. Second answer, TSH, and if elevated, then nuclear thyroid scan. Answer three is TSH, and if suppressed, then nuclear thyroid scan. Number four is thyroglobulin, and if low, then surgery. And number five, thyroglobulin, and if high, then surgery.
So the generally now the nuclear thyroid scan is not routinely done unless you have hyperthyroidism. So you do want on a patient that you suspect a nodule, you do want to know thyroid function. But if you suspect a nodule, for example, by physical exam, the test of choice would be thyroid ultrasound. And routinely, we wouldn't do a thyroid scan for only for somebody that was suspected to be hyperthyroid.
According to the Endocrine Society guidelines for initial testing for Cushing syndrome, which of the following is the preferred test? Urine-free cortisol, insulin tolerance test, 8 a.m. salivary cortisol, pituitary MRI, or adrenal CAT scan? And we're getting some answers.
So the two main screening tests would be urine-free cortisol and 1 milligram overnight dexamethasone suppression test. I have much doubt that you would ever be asked to tell which one was the better test. We debate that in endocrinology. So you need to know that it's one or the other, which is why on this question I put only one of those, and that was based on Endocrine Society guidelines.
A 22-year-old male presents with a BMI of 20 and fasting serum glucose of 580. He reports thirst and frequent urination with a 10-pound weight loss over 6 weeks. Standard treatment is initiated for glucose. He has poor compliance over the next 25 years of care for his glucose. Blood pressure is controlled on lisinopril during the same time frame. And the question, which of the following is the most likely resulting retinal image prior to retinal treatment? do you say?
I think some of the images are too small to look at. So, of course, I described a patient that has longstanding poor control of diabetes, and you're looking for a retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy, blood pressure was controlled, but poor control of diabetes. Now, some patients, even with 25 years of poorly controlled diabetes, don't have it, but this would be the standard. And I tried to write the question actually in the NBOME standard, which is to give you a setting where you try to make the diagnosis based on the information and then look at the best of the images.
A normal weight 28-year-old female with secondary oligomenorrhea and galactorrhea presents to your office. Her prolactin level is elevated. MRI of the sella reveals a 5-millimeter pituitary microadenoma. Prolactin level is elevated and you suspect this is a prolactinoma. Other pituitary hormones are normal. Which of the following statements regarding prolactinomas is true? And the possible answer, she will never be able to become pregnant due to the adenoma, cabergoline or bromocriptine would likely be effective choices to lower the prolactin level and cause the prolactinoma to decrease in size. MRI should be obtained yearly to follow the size, even if the prolactin level is suppressed with cabergoline. Galactorrhea and oligomenorrhea will likely not improve with treatment. Prolactinomas occur only in females. Looks like you have chosen two.
And the correct answer was cabergoline or bromocriptine. That would lower the prolactin, cause the tumor to shrink. This looks like an efficiently functioning prolactinoma. Period should come back, should be normally fertile. Men can get prolactinomas just as well as women can. And after a year or two of adequate treatment, if the prolactin level stays very low, you could even try a holiday off the medication. And we tend to go with cabergoline instead of bromocriptine.
I think that really was a test of my vision. A patient presents to the hospital with head trauma. He has an elevated sodium level and a large volume of dilute urine. He is found to have diabetes insipidus. Another test of my vision. Number one, this might represent partial or complete central diabetes insipidus. Number two, DDAVP should be started immediately even if sodium level is low. Number three, fluid restrictions should be initiated. Number four, DDAVP will work well if this is nephrogenic or central diabetes insipidus. And number five, MRI of the head with attention to the pituitary does not have to be obtained since it is obvious that head trauma caused the diabetes insipidus.
Okay, in the last one, I also want to mention that you don't have to get an MRI in the prolactinomas because the prolactin level's proportional to the size of the tumor. So if the prolactin stays low, it means the tumor is not growing if it's a prolactinoma. And the correct answer for this is this might represent partial or complete diabetes insipidus. You don't know, and you need to get some scan of the head because you can't assume it's head trauma. It could be a big tumor and they're a pituitary or a non-pituitary tumor. And as we talked about in the lecture, don't treat based on the sodium. Based on the urine output, based on the sodium and the urine output. If the sodium's high, then you might start treating.
Next question: a patient with large non-functioning pituitary macroadenoma is found to have panhypopituitarism. He has had orthostasis, nausea, and weight loss for 8 to 12 months. Which of these would be most consistent with panhypopituitarism from a pituitary macroadenoma? Number one, lower inappropriate normal TSH and low free T4. B is hypergonadotropic hypogonadism. C is striae and supraclavicular fat pads. D is normal ACTH stimulation test. And E, bilateral central visual field defects.
Okay, and the answer is lower inappropriately normal TSH and low free T4. Can you go back to the other one again, to the slide before that? Or I have it, I guess. There we go. Thank you. right there. It would be hypogonadotropic hypogonadism, and ACTH stimulation test should be abnormal, and it should be bilateral or bitemporal hemianopsia, not a central vision defect.
A 65-year-old male presents with recurrent calcium kidney stones. He is found to have a calcium level of 11.8. PTH level is elevated. Serum creatinine is 1.4. 24-hour urine calcium excretion is elevated. Parathyroid cestamibi scan is performed but does not reveal any abnormality. Most likely cause of the hyperparathyroidism is A, solitary benign parathyroid adenoma, but more than one adenoma is something. B, parathyroid cancer. C is Menn syndrome. D is tertiary hyperparathyroidism due to renal insufficiency. And E, occult malignancy, either metastatic to bone or producing PTH-related peptide.
Okay, and the answer is A. This is just a classic case of primary hyperparathyroidism. Parathyroid cestamibi scan can be wrong 25% of the time, a false negative rate, depending on where it's done. So this is just typical primary hyperpara.
So in the practice that I trained in, we were all nuclear people as well, and when we did those parathyroid scans, we were careful to say that even when we did not see anything, that doesn't mean there's not an adenoma. So, in fact, in the old days, they would operate even without the parathyroid scan. The key thing is that mostly you're going to have radiologists reading them, and they're just trying to say whether there's something there or not, and they're not thinking about the lab. So the appropriate thing is, no, there is no evidence of a lesion, but the laboratory workup should supersede that.
And also they get an ultrasound, too, at the same time, and they try to correlate the two.
Next question, you're already ahead of us. A healthy but obese 55-year-old African-American male has a fasting glucose of 150 and an A1C of 7% at his yearly office visit. He is told he has type 2 diabetes mellitus. He is given a referral to see the dietitian and start diabetes education classes. Liver and kidney function tests are normal. He is given a prescription for a glucose monitor. The best next step is A, MRI of the head and adrenal, since he likely has Cushing syndrome. B, institute metformin at this visit, since his renal and hepatic function are normal. C, avoid exercise completely, since he likely has undiagnosed heart disease. D, start a sulfonylurea or Actos as monotherapy at this visit. And E, wait 3 months, and if his A1C is still 7% or higher, start metformin.
And most of you got that. The answer is B, institute metformin. That's the first treatment at diagnosis of diabetes. His renal and hepatic function tests are normal. Now, the one caveat about that exercise thing, yes, he should exercise, but I always tell them exercise cautiously because diabetics often don't get chest pain when they have as a anginal equivalent. They just get shortness of breath or fatigue with exertion. So tell them to start slowly if he gets shortness of breath or fatigue with exertion. It needs a nuclear stress test.
Regarding type 1 diabetes mellitus, choices are A, insulin pump therapy should be reserved for non-compliant patients or patients who have very high A1Cs or on conventional insulin therapy. B, many patients will benefit from MDI, multiple daily injections, including basal and bolus insulins, but must be taught how to use this regimen effectively. And C, DCCT trial was a major trial of patients in type 2 diabetes mellitus. UK PDS was a major trial in type 1 diabetes. And D is severe DKA should generally be treated with intravenous Humalog drip or intravenous Novolog drip. And E, antibodies antibodies that might help diagnose this condition, GAD65 antibody and insulin antibody. Other autoimmune diseases such as celiac disease, hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, and so forth, are rare in patients with type 1 diabetes mellitus.
You can tell that's my question. The answer is B. Many patients will benefit from intensive insulin therapy. Now, again, intensive insulin therapy, you can put them on 12 shots a day if you don't teach them how to use it or use it effectively or have some consistency in diet. Nothing's going to be effective. But send them to medical nutrition therapy, send them to diabetes education. They should be able to at least do as well on this regimen, if not better, than any other regimen. And I mentioned the other one going back here. To the slide before, the bottom one was correct, except antibodies. All these other autoimmune diseases are very common in people with type 1 diabetes, and also the trials one, the C answer, I had those reversed. DCCT is type 1, and UKPDS is type 2 diabetes, and never use insulin analogs in for DKA. Always use regular insulin.